Jess. The apartment is as bright as I can make it. I turned on every single lamp. I've even put a vinyl on Ben's posh record player. I'm trying not to panic, and it seemed a good idea to have as much noise and light as possible. It was so quiet when I entered the building just now. Too quiet, somehow. Like there was no one behind the doors I passed. Like the place itself was listening, waiting for something. It's totally different now, being here. Before, it was just a feeling I couldn't put my finger on. But now I've heard the end of their voice note. Now I know that the last time I heard from Ben, he was afraid, and that there was someone in this apartment with him. I think about the girl, too. The look on her face when I said I thought something had happened to Ben. She was scared, but it also seemed like she had somehow been expecting it. Suddenly, I'm very aware of how, if you looked across from the right spot in any of the other apartments, you'd be able to see me sitting here, lit up like I'm on stage. I go to the windows and slam all the big wooden shutters closed. Better. There were definitely curtains here once. I notice that the rings on the rail are all broken, as though at some point they've been pulled down. I can't just sit here and run through everything in my head over and over. There must be something else I'm missing. Something that will provide a clue as to what might have happened. I tear through the apartment. I crouch down to look under the bed, rip through the shirts in Ben's wardrobe, hunt through the kitchen cabinets. I yank his desk away from the wall. Bingo. Something falls out. Something that had been trapped between the wall and the back of the desk. I pick it up. It's a notebook. One of those posh leather ones, just the kind Ben would use. I flick it open. There are a few notes that look like they're for restaurant reviews, that kind of thing. Then, on a page near the back, I read, "La Petite Mort. Sophie M. knows. Mimi. How does she fit in? The concierge? La Petite Mort. Even I can translate that. The Little Death. Sophie M. It has to be Sophie Meunier, the woman who lives in the penthouse apartment. Sophie M. knows. What does she know? Mimi. That's the girl on the fourth floor. The one who looked like she was going to hurl her breakfast when I asked about Ben. How does Mimi fit in? What is the concierge's connection? Why was Ben writing in his notebook about these people? About little deaths? I flip through the rest of the notebook, hoping to discover more, only to find it's blank after this. But this does tell me something. There is something strange going on with the people in this building. Ben was keeping notes about them. I drink more of Ben's wine, waiting for it to take the edge off my nerves, but it doesn't seem to be helping. It only starts to make me feel groggy. I put the wine glass down, because I have an urge to stay awake, to keep watch, to keep thinking. I don't want to fall asleep here. Suddenly it doesn't feel safe. When my eyes start closing of their own accord, I realize I don't have a choice. I have to sleep. I need the energy to keep going. I drag myself into the bedroom and fall onto the bed. I know I can't do any more today, not while I'm this knackered. But as I turn out the light, I realize that a whole day has now passed without word from my brother. And the feeling of dread grows. My eyes snap open. It feels like no time has passed, but the neon numbers on Ben's alarm clock read 3 o'clock. Something woke me. I know it, even if I'm not sure what. Could it have been the cat, knocking something over? But no, it's here at the end of the bed. I can feel the weight of its body against my feet, and as my eyes adjust to the dark, I can make it out more clearly in the green glow of the alarm clock. It's sitting up, alert, ears pricked and twitching like radars trying to catch a signal. It's listening to something. And then I hear it. A creak. The sound of a floorboard giving under someone's foot. Someone's here, in the apartment with me. Just the other side of the French doors. But could it be Ben? I open my mouth to call out. Then I hesitate. Remember the voice note. There's no light beneath the French doors. My visitor is moving around in the dark. Ben would have switched on the lights by now. Suddenly, I'm wide awake. More than awake. Wired. My breathing sounds too loud in the silence. I try to calm it, make it as quiet as possible. I close my eyes and fake sleep, lying as still as I can. Has someone broken in? Wouldn't I have heard the glass shattering, the door splintering? I wait, listening to every tiny creak of the footsteps making their way around the room. It doesn't feel as though they're in any particular rush. I pull the throw up, so I'm almost completely covered by it. And then, through the thundering of my own blood in my ears, I hear the doors to the bedroom begin to open. My chest is so tight, it's hard to breathe. My heart is jumping against my ribs. I'm still pretending to sleep. But at the same time, I'm thinking about the lamp next to the bed. The metal base nice and heavy. I could snatch out an arm. I wait, head pressed against the pillow, trying to decide whether to grab for the lamp now or... But... Now I hear the soft pad of footsteps retreating. I hear the French doors closing. And then, a few moments later, further away, the groan of the main door to the apartment opening and shutting. They've gone. I lie still for a moment, my breathing coming in rough pants. Then I jump up, push through the French doors, and run out into the main room. If I move quickly, I might catch them. But first, I rummage through the kitchen cupboards, come up with a heavy frying pan, just in case, then pull open the apartment's main door. The corridor and stairwell are dark and silent. I close the door, go to the windows instead. Maybe I'll catch someone out there in the courtyard. But it's just a dark pit. The black shapes of trees and bushes. No flicker of movement. Where did they go? I turn on a light. The place looks completely untouched. No broken glass. And the front door looks undamaged. Like they just walked right in. I could almost believe I dreamt it. But someone was here. I'm certain. I heard them. The cat heard them. Even if, right now, it couldn't look more chilled, sprawled on the sofa, cleaning delicately between its outspread toes. A glance at Ben's desk. And that's when I realize the notebook is gone. I search the drawers, behind the gap in the desk where I found it before. Shit! I'm an idiot. Why did I leave it out there in full view? Why didn't I hide it somewhere? It seems so obvious now. After hearing that voice note, I should have taken extra precautions. I should have put something in front of the door. Should have known that someone might come in here, poke around. Because they wouldn't need to break in. if it's the same person Ben was speaking to on that recording, they already have a key.
30 hours earlier. Ben. Everything goes black. Just for a moment. Then it all becomes terrifyingly clear. It is going to happen here. Now. In this apartment, right here, on this innocuous spot of flooring just beyond the door, he is going to die. He understands what must have happened. Nick. Who else? But one of the others in this place might be involved, because, of course, they're all connected. Please, he manages. I can explain. He's always been able to talk himself out of any situation. Benjamin Silvertongue, she called him. If he can only find the words. But speech seems suddenly very difficult. The next attack comes with astonishing suddenness, astonishing force. His voice is pleading, high as a child's. No, no, please, please, don't. The words tumbling out of him. He who is always so poised. No time for explanations now. He is begging, begging for mercy. But there is none in the eyes gazing down upon him. He sees the blood spatter onto his jeans, but he doesn't understand what it is immediately. Then he watches as spots of crimson begin to fall onto the parquet floor. Slowly at first, then faster, faster. It doesn't look real. Such a brilliant, intense red, and there is so much of it all at once. How can all of this have come from him? More and more every second. It must be spilling out of him. Then it happens again, the next attack. And he is falling, and on the way down, his head bounces against something hard and sharp, the edge of the kitchen counter. He should have known, should have been less arrogant, less cavalier, should at least have had a chain put on the door. And yet he thought he was invincible. Thought that he was the one in control. He has been so stupid. So arrogant. Now he's down on the floor and he cannot imagine ever being able to stand again. He tries to put up his hands, to beg without words to defend himself, but his hands won't obey him either. His body is no longer within his control. With this comes a new terror. He is utterly helpless. The shutters. The shutters are open. It's dark outside, which means that this whole scene must be illuminated to the outside world. If someone saw, if someone could come to help. With a vast effort, he opens his eyes, turns, and begins to crawl towards the windows. It's so hard. Each time he places a hand, it slips out from under him. It takes a moment for him to realize that this is because the floor is slick with his own blood. Eventually, he reaches the window. He raises himself a little way above the sill. He reaches out a hand and marks a gory handprint against the pane. Is there someone out there? A face turned up towards him, caught by the light spilling from the windows out there in the gloom. His vision is blurring again. He tries to beat his palm to mouth the word, help. And then the pain hits him. It is huge. More overwhelming than anything he has experienced in his life. He can't bear this, surely. It must be too much. This is where the story ends. And his last lucid thought is, Jess. Jess will be coming tonight. And no one will be here to meet her. From the moment she arrives, she too will be in danger.
Sunday. Nick. Second floor. Morning. I enter the building's stairwell. I've been running for hours. I have no idea how long, actually, or how far I went. Miles, probably. Normally I'd have the exact stats, would be checking my Garmin obsessively, uploading it all to Strava the second I'd got back. This morning, I can't even be bothered to look. just needed to clear my head. I only stopped because the agony in my calf began to cut through everything else, though for a while I almost enjoyed running through the pain. An old injury. I pushed a Silicon Valley quack to prescribe me oxycodone for it, which also helped dull the sting when my investments started to go bad. On the first floor, I hesitate outside the apartment. I knock on the door once, twice, three times. Listen for the sound of footsteps inside while I take in the scuffed doorframe, the stink of stale cigarette smoke. I linger perhaps a couple of minutes, but there's no answer. He's probably passed out in there in a drunken stupor. Or maybe he's avoiding me. I wouldn't be surprised. I have something I want, need, to say to the guy. But I suppose it'll have to wait. Then I close the door, start climbing the stairs, my eyes stinging. I lift the hem of my sweat-soaked t-shirt to rub at them, then carry on up. I'm just passing by the third-floor apartment, when the door is flung open and there she stands. Jess. Hi, I say, pushing a hand through my hair.
Oh,
she says, looking confused.
It looked like you were going upstairs.
No, I say. No, actually, I was coming to see how you were. I meant to say sorry for running off yesterday, when we were talking. Did you have any luck tracking Ben down? I look at her closely. Her face is pale. No longer the sly little fox she seemed yesterday. Now she's a rabbit in the headlamps. Jess, I say. Are you all right? She opens her mouth, but for a moment no sound comes out. I get the impression she's fighting some sort of internal battle. Finally, she blurts,
Someone was in here very early this morning. Someone else must have a key to this apartment.
A key?
Yeah, they came in and crept around.
Less rabbit in the headlamps now. That tough veneer coming back up.
What, into the apartment?
Did they take anything? She shrugs, hesitates.
No.
Look, Jess, I say. It sounds to me like you should speak to the police. She screws up her face.
I called them yesterday. They weren't any help.
What did they say?
That they'd make a record,
she says with an eye roll.
But then, I don't know why I even bothered. I'm the fucking idiot who comes to Paris alone, barely able to speak the language. Why I thought they'd take me seriously.
How much French can you speak? I ask her. She shrugs.
Hardly anything. I can just about order a beer, but that's it. Pretty bloody useless, right?
Look, why don't I come with you to the commissariat? I'm sure they'd be more helpful if I spoke to them in French. She raises her eyebrows.
Oh, that would be... Well, that would be amazing. Thank you. Look, I'm really grateful.
A shrug.
I'm not good at asking for favors.
You didn't ask, I offered. I told you yesterday I want to help. I mean it.
Well, thanks.
She tugs at the chain of her necklace.
Can we go soon? I need to get out of this place.
Jess. We're out on the street, walking along in silence. My thoughts are churning. That voice note made me feel like I shouldn't trust anyone in the building, including Ben's old uni mate, friendly as he might be. On the other hand, Nick's the one who suggested going to the police. Surely he wouldn't do that if he had something to do with Ben's disappearance.
This way.
Nick takes hold of my elbow. My arm tingles slightly at his touch and steers me into an alleyway. No, more like a kind of stone tunnel between buildings.
A cut through, he says.
In contrast with the crowded street we left behind, there's suddenly no one else in sight, and it's much darker. Our footsteps echo. I don't like that I can't see the sky. It's a relief when we pop out at the other end, but as we turn onto the street, I see it ends in a police barricade. There are several guys wearing helmets and stab vests, holding batons, radios crackling. Fuck, I say, heart thudding. Melt, says Nick at the same time. He goes over and speaks to them. I stay where I am. They don't seem friendly. I can feel them looking us over.
It's the riots,
Nick says, striding back.
They're expecting a bit of trouble.
He looks closely at me.
You okay?
Yeah, fine. I remind myself that we're literally on the way to talk to the police. They might be able to help. But it suddenly feels important to get something off my chest. Hey, Nick, I start, as we begin walking again.
Yeah?
Yesterday, when I spoke to the police, they said they wanted to take my name and address for their records or whatever. I don't want to give them that information. Nick frowns at me.
Why is that?
It's not worth getting into. But because he's still looking at me oddly, and I don't want him to think I'm some sort of hardened criminal, I say, I had a little trouble at work, just before I came here. More than a little trouble. 2 days ago, I walked into the Copacabana, smile on my face, as though my boss hadn't flashed his dick at me the day before. Oh, I can play along when I need to. I needed that bloody job. And then at lunch, before opening, while the pervert was taking a crap, he went in there with a dirty magazine. I knew I had a while. I went and got the little key from his office and opened the till and took everything in it. It wasn't loads. He was too wily for that. Refilled it every day. But it was enough to get here. Enough to escape on the first Eurostar I could book myself onto. Oh, and for good measure, I heaved 2 kegs in front of the toilet door, one stacked on the other, and the top one just under the door handle so he couldn't turn it. Would have taken him a while to get out of that one. So no, I'm not desperate to be on any official record of anything. It's not like I think Interpol are after me, but I don't like the idea of my name in some sort of system. Of the police here comparing notes with the UK. I came here for a new start. Nothing major, I say. It's just sensitive.
Sure,
Nick says.
Look, I'll give them my details as a contact. Does that work?
Yes, I say, my shoulders slumping with relief. Thank you. Nick, that would be great.
So,
he says, as we wait at some traffic lights.
I'm thinking of what I say to the police. I'll tell them you thought there was someone in the apartment last night, of course.
I don't think there was someone, I interject. I know.
Sure,
he nods.
And is there anything else you want me to say?
I pause. Well, I spoke to Ben's editor. He turns to me.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, this guy at The Guardian. I don't know if it's important, but it sounded like Ben had an idea he was excited about for an article.
What about?
I don't know. Some big investigative piece. But I suppose if he got mixed up in something... Nick slows down slightly.
But his editor doesn't know what the piece was about.
No.
Ah, that's a shame.
and I found a notebook. But it was missing this morning. It had these notes in it about people in the building. Sophie Minier, you know, the lady from upstairs. Mimi from the fourth floor, the concierge. There was this line, Le Petit Mort. I think it means the little death. I see something shift in Nick's expression. What is it? What does it mean? He coughs.
Well, it's also a euphemism for orgasm.
Oh. I'm not all that easy to embarrass, but I feel my cheeks growing warm. I'm also suddenly really aware of Nick's eyes on me. How near we are to each other in the otherwise empty street. There's a long, awkward silence. Anyway, I say, whoever was creeping around this morning took the notebook, so there must be something in it. We turn into a side street. I spot a couple of ragged posters pasted to some hoardings. Pause for a moment in front of them. Ghostly faces printed in black and white stare out at me. I don't need to understand French to know what, who, these are. Missing persons.
Look, Nick says, following my gaze. It's probably going to be tough. Loads of people go missing every year. They have a certain cultural issue here. There's this view that if someone goes missing, it may be for their own reasons, that they have a right to disappear.
Okay, but surely they won't think that's what's happened to Ben. Because there's more. I hesitate, then decide to risk telling Nick about the voice note. A long pause while he digests it.
The other person, he says. Could you actually hear their voice?
No. I don't think they said anything. It was just Ben talking. I think of the... What the fuck? He was scared. I've never heard him like that. We should tell the police about that too, right? Play it for them.
Yes, definitely.
We walk in silence for a couple more minutes, Nick setting the pace. And then suddenly he stops in front of a building, big and modern and seriously ugly. A total contrast to all the fancy apartment blocks flanking it.
Okay, here we are.
I look up at the building in front of us. Commissariat de police, it says, in large black letters above the entrance. I swallow, then follow Nick inside. Wait just inside the front door as he speaks in fluent-sounding French to the guy on the desk. I try to imagine what it must be like to have the confidence Nick has in a place like this. To feel like you have a right to be here. To my left, there are three people in grimy clothes being held in cuffs, faces smeared with what looks like soot, yelling and tussling with the policeman holding them. More protesters. I feel like I have much more in common with them than I do with the nice rich boy who's brought me here. I jump back as 9 or 10 guys in riot gear burst into the reception and shove past me and out into the street, piling into a waiting van. The guy behind the desk is nodding at Nick. I see him pick up a telephone.
I asked to speak to someone higher up, Nick says as he comes over. That way will actually be listened to. He's just calling through now.
Oh, great, I say. Thank God for Nick and his fluent French and his posh boy hustle. I know if I'd walked in here, I'd have been fobbed off again. Or worse, bottled it and left before I'd spoken to anyone. The receptionist stands and beckons us through into the station. I swallow my unease about heading further into this place.
He leads us down a corridor into an office with a plaque that reads, Commissaire Blanchot, on the door, and a man, in his late 50s, I guess, sitting behind a huge desk. He looks up. A bristle of short grey hair, a big square face, small dark eyes. He stands and shakes Nick's hand, then turns to me, looks me up and down, and sweeps a hand at the two chairs in front of his desk.
Asseyez-vous?
Clearly Nick pulled some strings. The office and Blanchot's air of importance tell me he's some sort of bigwig. But there's something about the guy I don't like. I can't put my finger on it. Maybe it's the pitbull face. Maybe it's to do with the way he looked at me just now. It doesn't matter, I remind myself. I don't have to like him. All I need is for him to do his job properly, to find my brother. And I'm not so blind that I can't see I might be bringing my own baggage to all of this. Nick starts speaking to Blanchot in French. I can barely pick up a word they're saying. I catch Ben's name, I think, and a couple of times they glance in my direction.
Sorry, Nick turns back to me. I realize we were talking pretty fast. I wanted to get everything in. Could you follow any of it? He doesn't speak much English, I'm afraid.
I shake my head. It wouldn't have made much difference if you'd gone slowly.
Don't worry, I'll explain. I've laid out the whole situation to him, and basically, we're coming up against what I was telling you about before, the right to disappear. But I'm trying to convince him this is something more than that. That you, that we, are really worried about Ben.
You've told him about the notebook? I ask. And what happened last night? Nick nods.
Yes, I went through all that.
How about the voice note? I hold up my phone. I have it right here. I could play it.
That's a great idea, Nick says something to Commissaire Blanchot,
then turns to me and nods.
You'd like to listen to it.
I hand over the phone. I don't like the way the guy snatches it from me. He's just doing his job, Jess, I tell myself. He plays the voice note through some kind of loudspeaker and, once again, I hear my brother's voice like I've never heard it before.
What the fuck?
And then the sound. That strange groan. I look over at Nick. He's gone white. He seems to be having the same reaction as I did. It tells me my gut feeling was right. Blanchot turns it off and nods at Nick. Because I don't speak French, or I'm a woman, or both, it feels like I barely exist to him. I prod Nick. He has to do something now. Yes? Nick swallows, then seems to pull himself together. He asks the guy a question, turns back to me.
Yes, I think that's helped. It gives us a good case.
Out of the corner of my eye, I see Blanchot watching the two of us, his expression blank. And then suddenly, it's all over, and they're shaking hands again, and Nick is saying,
Merci, Commissaire Blanchot.
And I say, Merci, too. And Blanchot smiles at me, and I try to ignore the uneasiness that I know is probably less to do with this guy than everything he represents. Then we're being shown back out into the corridor, and Blanchot's door is closing. How do you think it went? I ask Nick, as we walk out of the front door of the station. Did he take it seriously? He nods.
Yes, eventually. I think the voice note clinched it, he says,
his voice hoarse. He still looks pale and sickened by what he just heard on the voice note.
And don't worry, I've given myself as a contact, not you. As soon as I hear anything, I'll let you know. For a moment, back out on the street, Nick stops and stands stock still. I watch as he covers his eyes with his hand and takes a long, shaky breath. And I think, here is someone else who cares about Ben. Maybe I'm not quite as alone in this as I thought.
Sophie, penthouse. I'm sitting up the apartment for drinks. The last Sunday of every month, Jacques and I host everyone in our penthouse apartment. We open some of the finest vintages from the store in the cellar. But this evening will be different. We have a great deal to discuss. I pour the wine into its decanter, arrange the glasses. We could afford staff to do this. But Jacques never wanted strangers in this apartment, capable of nosing around through his private affairs. It has suited me well enough. Though I suppose if we did have staff, I might have been less alone here, over the years. As I place the decanter on the low table in the sitting area, I can see him there in the armchair opposite me. Benjamin Daniels. Exactly as he sat nearly 3 months ago. One leg crossed over the knee at the ankle, a glass of wine dangling from one hand. So at ease in the space. I watched him, saw him sizing the place up, the wealth of it, or perhaps trying to find a flaw in the furnishings I had chosen as carefully as the clothes I wear. The mid-century Florence Knoll armchair, the Homme silk rug beneath his feet. To signify class, good taste, the kind of breeding that cannot be bought. He turned and caught me watching, grinned. That smile of his. A fox entering the hen coop. I smiled back coolly. I would not be wrong-footed. I would be the perfect hostess. He asked Jacques about his collection of antique rifles.
I'll show you.
Jacques lifted one down. A rare honor.
Feel that bayonet. You could run a man straight through with it.
Ben said all the right things. Noticed the condition, the detailing on the brass. My husband. A man not easily charmed. But he was. I could see it.
What do you do, Ben?
He asked, pouring him a glass. A hot late summer night. White would have been better. But Jacques wanted to show off the vintage.
I'm a writer,
Ben said.
He's a journalist,
Nick said at the same time. I watched Jacques' face closely.
What sort of journalist?
He asked it so lightly. Ben shrugged.
Mainly restaurant reviews, new exhibitions, that sort of thing.
Ah, Jacques said. He sat back in his chair, king of all he surveyed.
Well, I'm happy to suggest some restaurants for you to review.
Ben smiled, that easy charismatic smile.
That would be very helpful, thank you. I like you, Ben,
Jacques told him, pointing.
You remind me a little of myself at your age. Fire in the belly. Hunger. I had it too, that drive. It's more than can be said for some young men these days.
Antoine and his wife Dominique arrived then, from the first floor apartment. Antoine's shirt was missing a button. It gaped open, the soft flesh pushing through. Dominique, however, had made what could be described as an effort. She wore a dress made of a knit so fine that it clung to every ripe curve of her body. Mon Dieu, you could see her nipples. There was something Bardot-like about her, the sullen moo of her mouth, those dark bovine eyes. I found myself thinking all that ripeness would fade, run to fat. Just look at Bardot, poor cow. Anathema to so many French men. Fat in this country is seen as a sign of weakness, even of stupidity. The thought gave me a nasty sort of pleasure. I watched her look at Ben, look up and down and all over him. I suppose she thought she was subtle. To me, she resembled a cheap whore, touting for a fare. I saw him gaze back, two attractive people noticing one another. That frisson. She turned back to Antoine. I watched her mouth curve into a smile while she talked to him.
But the smile was not for her husband. It was for Ben. A carefully calculated display. Antoine was drinking too much. He drained his glass and held it out for a refill. His breath, even from a couple of feet away, smelt sour. He was embarrassing himself.
Does anyone smoke?
Ben asked.
I'm going to go for a cigarette. Terrible habit, I know. I wondered if I might use the roof terrace.
It's that way, I told him. Past the bookcase there, and to the left, out of the doorway. You'll see the steps.
Thanks.
He smiled at me, that charming smile. I waited for the sensor lights to come on, which would be the sign that he had found his way to the roof terrace. They did not. It should have only taken him a minute or so to climb the steps. As the others talked, I got up to investigate. There was no sign of him out on the terrace, or in the other half of the room beyond the bookcase. I had that cold, creeping feeling again, the sense that a fox had entered the henhouse. I walked along the shadowed corridor that leads to the other rooms in the apartment. I found him in Jack's study, the lights off. He was looking at something.
What are you doing in here?
My skin was prickling with outrage, fear too. He turned in the dark space.
Sorry, he said. I must have got confused with the directions.
They were quite clear. It was difficult to remain civil, to suppress the urge to simply tell him to get out. It was left, I said, out of the doorway, the opposite direction. He pulled a face.
My mistake. Perhaps I've had too much of that delicious wine. But tell me, while we're here, this photograph. It fascinates me.
I knew instantly which one he was looking at. A large black and white, a nude, hung opposite my husband's desk. The woman's face turned sideways, her profile dissolving into the shadows, her breasts bared, the dark triangle of her pubic hair between white thighs. I'd asked Jack to get rid of it. It was so inappropriate, so seedy.
It belongs to my husband, I said curtly. This is his study. So this is where the great man works,
he said.
And do you work yourself?
No, I said. He must know that, surely. Women in my position do not work.
But you must have done something before you met your husband.
Yes.
Sorry, he said,
after the pause had grown so long. It felt like a physical presence in the air between us.
It's the journalist in me. I'm just curious about people.
He shrugged.
It's incurable, I'm afraid. Please forgive me.
I'd thought it that first time I met him, that he wielded his charm like a weapon. But now, I was sure of it. Our new neighbor was dangerous. I thought of the notes, my mystery blackmailer. Could it be a coincidence that they'd arrived almost at the same time? This man, with his air of knowing, and the demand for money, threatening to reveal my secrets? If so, I would not allow it. I would not let this random stranger dismantle everything I had built. I managed to find my voice.
I'll show you to the roof terrace, I told him,
followed him until he walked through the right door. He turned around and gave me a grin, a brief nod. I did not smile back. I went back and joined the others. A few moments later, Dominique stood up, announced that she, too, was going for a cigarette. Perhaps she was embarrassed by her husband, drinking himself into a stupor on the sofa. Or, I thought of the way she looked at Ben when she arrived. She was simply shameless. Antoine's arm shot out. His hand gripped her wrist, hard. The wine glass in her hand jerked, a crimson splash landed on the pale knit of her dress.
Non, he said. Tu ne feras rien de la sorte.
You'll do no such thing. Dominique glanced at me then, her eyes wide, woman to woman. See how he treats me? I looked away. You have made your choices, chérie, just as I have made mine. I knew what sort of man my husband was when I married him. I'm sure it was the same for you. If not, well, you're even more of a foolish little tart than I thought. I watched as she wrenched her hand away from her husband's grip and stalked off in the direction of the roof terrace. I imagined the two of them up there, could see the scene play out. The rooftops of Paris laid out before them,
the illuminated streets like strings of fairy lights, her bending forward as she lit her cigarette from his, her lips brushing his hand. They came back down a short while later. When he spotted them, Antoine rose from the seat where he had been slumped. He lumbered over to Dominique.
We're going.
She shook her head. No, I don't want to. He leant in very close and hissed, loud enough for all of us to hear.
We're going, you little slut.
Petite salope. And then he turned to Ben.
Stay away from my wife, you English bastard. Comprends-tu? Understand.
Like a final piece of punctuation, he gestured with his full wine glass, and I could not tell if it was because he was drunk, or if it was on purpose that it flew from his hand. An explosion of glass. Wine smattered up the wall. Everything went very still and quiet. Ben turned to Jacques.
I'm very sorry, Monsieur Meunier. Please.
Jacques stood.
Do not apologize.
He stalked over to Antoine.
No one behaves like that in my apartment. You are not welcome here. Get out.
His voice was cold, heavy with menace. Antoine's mouth opened. I saw his teeth stained by the wine. For a moment I thought he was about to say something unforgivable. Then he turned and looked at Ben. A long look that said more than any words could. The silence that followed their exit rang like a tuning fork. Later, while Jacques took a phone call, I went and took a shower in my bathroom. I found myself almost idly directing the showerhead between my legs. The image that came to my mind was of the two of them, Dominique and Ben, up in the roof garden. Of all the things that might have occurred between them while the rest of us made small talk downstairs. And as my husband barked instructions, just audible through the wall, I had a silent orgasm, my head pressed against the cool tiles. The little death, it's called. La petite mort. And perhaps that was only appropriate. A small part of me had died that evening. Another part had come alive.
Jess. It's evening, and I'm back in the apartment, gazing out into the courtyard, looking up and down at the illuminated squares of my neighbor's windows, trying to catch a glimpse of one of them moving around. I've texted Nick a couple of times to ask if he's heard anything from the police, but I haven't heard anything back yet. I know it's way too soon, but I couldn't help myself. I'm grateful for his help earlier. It's good to feel I have an ally in this. But I still don't trust the police to do anything. I'm starting to feel itchy again. I can't just sit around waiting to hear. I shrug on my jacket and step out of the apartment onto the landing, not knowing what I'm going to do, but knowing I need to do something. As I pause, trying to decide what that is, I realize I can hear raised voices somewhere above me, echoing down the stairwell. I can't resist following the sound upwards. I start to climb the stairs, up past Mimi's on the fourth floor, listening for a moment to the silence behind the door. The voices must be coming from the penthouse. I can hear a man speaking over the others, louder than the rest. But I can hear other voices now, too, though they all seem to be talking at once. I can't make out any of the words, though. Another flight of stairs, and I'm on the top landing, with the door to the penthouse apartment in front of me, and to my left that wooden stepladder leading up to the old maid's quarters. I creep towards the door of the penthouse apartment, wincing at every creak in the floorboards. Hopefully the people inside are too distracted by the sounds of their own voices to pay attention to anything outside. I get right up close to the door, then drop down and put my ear to the keyhole. The man starts to speak again, louder than before. Crap, it's all in French, of course it is. I think I hear Ben's name, and I go tense, craning to hear more.
but I can't make out a single... Elle est dangereuse. Wait. Even I can guess what that means. She is dangerous. I press my ear closer to the keyhole, listening hard for anything else I might understand. Suddenly, there's the sound of barking right up close to my ear. I stumble away from the keyhole, half fall backwards, try and scrabble my way to standing. Shit. I need to get out of here. I can't let them see. You. Too late. I turn back. She stands there in the doorway. Sophie Meunier. Wearing a cream silk shirt and black trousers. Crazily sparkling diamonds at her earlobes. Her expression's so frosty that they might be tiny icicles she just sprouted there. There's a small grey dog at her feet. A whippet? Looking at me with gleaming black eyes. What are you doing here? I heard voices. I trail off, realizing that hearing voices behind someone else's apartment door isn't exactly a good excuse to go and eavesdrop. Silver-tongued Ben might be able to, but I can't find a way of talking myself out of this one. She looks like she's trying to decide what to do with me. Finally, she speaks.
Well, as you are here, perhaps you will come in and join us for a drink.
She's watching me, waiting for an answer. Every instinct is telling me that going inside this apartment would be a very bad idea. Sure, I say. Thanks. I look down at my outfit. Converse, shabby jacket, jeans with a rip at the knee. Am I dressed okay? Her expression says she thinks there's nothing remotely okay about anything I'm wearing. But she says, you're fine as you are. Please, come with me. I follow her into the apartment. I can smell the perfume she's wearing. Something rich and floral. Although really, it just smells like money. Inside, I stare. The apartment is at least double the size of Ben's, perhaps bigger. A brightly lit, open-plan space, bisected by a giant bookcase. Floor-to-ceiling windows look out over the rooftops and buildings of Paris. In the darkness, the illuminated windows of all the apartment buildings surrounding us make a kind of tapestry of light. How much would an apartment like this cost? Lots. That's all I can guess. Millions? Probably. Fancy rugs on the floor, huge works of modern art on the walls, bright splashes and streaks of colour, big bold shapes. There's one small painting, nearest to me, a woman holding some kind of pot, a window behind her. I spot the signature in the bottom right corner. Matisse. Okay. Holy shit. I don't know much about art, but even I've heard of Matisse. And everywhere, displayed on side tables, are little figurines, delicate glass vases. I bet even the smallest would fetch me more than I earned in a whole year in that shitty bar. It would be so easy to slip one. I'm suddenly aware of feeling watched. I look up and meet a pair of eyes. Painted, not real. A huge portrait. A man sitting in an armchair. Strong jaw and nose. Grey at the temples. Kind of handsome, if a little cruel looking. It's the mouth, maybe. The curl to it. The funny thing is, he seems familiar. I feel like I've seen his face before. I can't for the life of me think where. Could he be someone a bit famous? A politician, something like that? But I'm not sure why I'd recognize some random politician, let alone a French one.
I don't know anything about that stuff. So it must be from somewhere else. But where on earth? My husband, Jacques, Sophie says, behind me. He's away on business at the moment, but I'm sure will be a small hesitation, eager to meet you. He looks powerful, rich, obviously rich. Just friggin' look at the place. What does he do? He's in wine, she says. So that explains the thousands of bottles of wine in the cellar. The cave must also belong to her and her husband. Next, my eye travels to a strange display on the opposite wall. At first, I think it's some kind of abstract art installation, but on second glance, I see it's a display of old guns, each with a sharp, knife-like protrusion attached to the end. Sophie follows my gaze. From the First World War, Jacques likes to collect antiques. One's missing, I say. Yes, it's gone for repair. They require more upkeep than you might think. Bon, she says curtly. Come through and meet the others. We walk towards the bookcase. It's only now that I become aware of the presence of people behind it. As we skirt round it, I see them facing each other on two cream-coloured sofas. Mimi from the fourth floor and, oh no, Antoine from the first floor. He's staring at me as though he is exactly as pleased to see me as I am him. Surely he's the sort of neighbour you just give a wide berth and leave to their own devices. When I look back, he's still staring at me. It feels like something's crawling down my spine. It's such a random grouping of people. Nothing in common with each other beyond the fact that they live nearby. Weird, quiet Mimi, who can only be 19 or 20. Antoine, a middle-aged mess. Sophie, in her silk and diamonds. What could they have been talking about just now? It didn't sound like a polite, neighbourly conversation. I can feel their eyes on me. Feel like they're all looking at me, like I'm an unknown specimen brought into a laboratory. Elle est dangereuse. I'm sure I didn't miss here. Perhaps you'd like a glass of wine? Sophie asks. Oh, yeah, thanks. She lifts the bottle, and as the wine glugs out into a glass, I see the gold image of the chateau on the front and realize it's familiar. The match of the bottle I picked up from the cellar downstairs. I take a long sip of my wine. I need it. I sense three pairs of eyes watching me. They're the ones with the power in this room, the knowledge. I don't like it. I feel outnumbered, trapped. And then I think, fuck it. One of them must know something about what happened to Ben. This is my chance. I still haven't heard from Ben, I say. You know, I'm really starting to think something must have happened to him. I want to shock them out of their watchful silence. So I say, when I went to the police today, it happened so quickly, too quickly for me to see how it unfolded. But there's a sudden commotion, and I see that the girl, Mimi, has spilled her glass of wine. The crimson liquid has spattered over the rug, up one leg of the sofa. No one moves for a second. Maybe, like me, the other two are watching as the dark liquid soaks into the fabric and feeling grateful that it wasn't them. The girl's face is a livid, beetroot red.
Merde, she says.
It's all right, Sophie says. Pas de problème.
but her voice is steel.
Mimi, fourth floor. Putain. I want to leave right now, but that would cause another scene, so I can't. I have to just sit here and take it while they all stare at me. While she stares at me. The white noise in my head becomes a deafening roar. Suddenly I can feel the sickness rising inside me. I have to leave the room. It's the only way. I feel like I'm not quite in control of myself. The wine glass. I'm not even sure whether it was an accident or whether I did it on purpose. I jump up from the sofa. I can still feel her watching me. I stumble down the corridor, find the bathroom. Get a grip, Mimi. Putain de merde, get a fucking grip! I vomit into the toilet bowl and then look in the mirror. My eyes are pink with burst blood vessels. For a moment, I actually think I see him appearing behind me. That smile of his, the way it felt like a secret shared just between the two of us. I could watch him for hours. Those hot, early autumn nights while he worked at his desk with all the windows open, and I lay on my bed with a fan blowing cool air onto the back of my neck and the lights off so he couldn't see me in the shadows. It was like watching him on a stage. Sometimes he walked about shirtless, once with just a towel wrapped around his waist so I could see the dark shadow of hair on his chest, that line of hair that arrowed from his stomach down beneath the towel. A man, not a boy. He hardly ever remembered to close the shutters. Or maybe he left them open on purpose. I got out my painting materials. He was my new favorite subject. I'd never painted that well before. I'd never covered the canvas so quickly. Normally I had to stop, check, correct my mistakes. But with him, I didn't need to. I imagined that one day, perhaps, I would ask him to sit for me. Sometimes I could hear his music drifting out across the courtyard. It felt like he wanted me to hear it. Maybe he was even playing it for me. One night he looked up and caught me watching. My heart stopped. Putain! I'd watched him for so long I forgot that he could see me too. It was so embarrassing. But then he raised his hand to me. Like he did on that first day when we saw him arriving in the Uber. Except then he was just saying hi. And it was to Camille, too. Mainly to Camille. Probably in her tiny bikini. But this time it was different. This time, it was just to me. I raised mine back. It felt like a private sign to each other. And then he smiled. I know I have this tendency to get a little fixated. A little obsessed. But I reckoned he was obsessive too, Ben. He sat there and typed until midnight, sometimes later. Sometimes with a cigarette in his mouth. Sometimes I smoked one too. It felt almost like we were smoking together. I watched him until my eyes burned. Now, in the bathroom, I splash cold water on my face, rinse the sourness of the vomit from my mouth. I try to breathe. Why did I agree to come this evening? I think of Camille throwing her little wicker basket over her arm, tripping out in the city earlier to hang out with friends, not a care in the world. Not trapped here like me, friendless and alone. How badly I longed to trade places with her. I can hear him speaking suddenly, as clearly as if he were standing behind me whispering in my ear. His breath warm against my skin.
You're strong, Mimi. I know you are. So much stronger than everyone thinks you are.
Jess. There's a long silence after Mimi disappears. I take a sip of my wine. So, I say at last, how do you all... I'm interrupted by the sound of a knock on the door. It seems to echo endlessly in the silence. Sophie Minier gets up to answer it. Antoine and I are left facing each other. He stares at me, unblinking. I think of him smashing that bottle in his apartment while I watched through the spy hole. How violent it seemed. I think of that scene with his wife in the courtyard. And then, under his breath, he hisses at me.
What are you doing here, little girl? Haven't you got the message yet?
I take a sip from my glass. Enjoying some of this nice wine, I tell him. It doesn't come out as flippant as I'd hoped. My voice wavers. I like to think I'm not scared of much, but this guy scares me. Nicolas, I hear Sophie say, using the French pronunciation of the name. And then, in English, welcome. Come and join us. Would you like a drink? Nick. Part of me feels relieved at his being here, but I'm not going to be stuck alone with these people. At the same time, I wonder, what is he doing here? A few moments later, he appears around the bookcase behind Sophie Minier, holding a glass of wine. Apparently living in Paris has given him more style than the average British guy. He's in a crisp white shirt, open at the neck, and setting off his tan perfectly, and navy trousers. His curling dark gold hair is pushed back from his brow. He looks like someone from a perfume ad. Beautiful, aloof. I catch myself. What am I doing? Lusting after this guy? Yes, Sophie says. This is Nicolas. Nick smiles at me.
Hey, he turns back to Sophie. Jess and I know each other.
There's a slightly awkward pause. Is this just something rich people who live in apartments like this do? All hang out together? It's not like any neighbours I've ever had. But then again, I haven't exactly lived in very neighbourly places. Sophie gives a wintry smile. Perhaps, Nicolas, you could show Jess the view from the roof garden.
Sure.
Nick turns to me.
Jess, you want to come and have a look?
I feel like Sophie's trying to get rid of me, but at the same time it's a chance to talk to Nick without the others listening. I follow him back past the bookcase, up another flight of stairs. He pushes open a door.
After you.
I have to step past him as he holds open the door, close enough that I can smell his expensive cologne, the faint tang of his sweat. A blast of freezing air hits me first, then the night sky, the lights below. The city spread out beneath me like an illuminated map, bright ribbons of streets snaking away in all directions, the blurry red glow of tail lights. For a second it feels like I've stepped out into thin air. I reel back. No, not quite thin air. But there's not much separating me from the streets five floors down besides a flimsy-looking iron rail. Suddenly, uplighters are humming on all around us. They must be on some kind of sensor. Now I can see shrubs and even trees in big stoneware pots. A big rose bush, which still has some white blooms attached to it. Statues not unlike the one that got smashed to pieces in the courtyard. Nick steps up onto the terrace behind me. Because I've been rooted to the spot, staring, I haven't given him any space. He has to stand pretty close behind me. I can feel the warmth of his breath on the back of my neck. Such a contrast to the freezing air. I have a sudden crazy impulse to lean back against him. What would his reaction be if I did? Would he pull away? But at the same time, I have an equally crazy urge to dive forward into the night. It feels like I could swim in it. When you're this high up, do you ever get the urge to jump? Yes, Nick says. And I realize I must have spoken the question out loud. I turn to him. I can barely make him out. Just a dark silhouette stitched against the glow from the lights behind him. He's tall, though. Standing this close, I'm aware of the difference between our heights. He takes a tiny step back. I look beyond him and notice that there's an extra layer of building above us. The windows dark and small and dust-smeared, ivy wound all over them, like something from a fairy tale. I wouldn't be surprised to see a ghostly face appearing behind the glass. What's up there? He follows my gaze.
Oh, it'll be the old Chambre des Bonnes, where the former maid's quarters were.
That must be where the wooden ladder leads. Then he gestures back out at the city.
Pretty good view from up here, isn't it?
It's insane, I say. How much do you reckon a place like this costs? A couple million? More than that?
I've got no idea.
But he must have some sort of idea. He must know what his own apartment is worth. It probably makes him feel awkward. I suspect he's too classy to talk about this sort of thing. Have you heard anything? I ask him. From that guy at the police station, Blanchot.
Unfortunately not.
It's strange, not being able to see his expression.
I know it's frustrating, but it's only been a few hours. Let's give it time.
I feel a swoop of despair. Of course he's right. Of course it's too soon. But I can't help panicking that I'm no closer to finding Ben, and no closer to working any of these people out. You all seem pretty friendly in there, I say, trying to keep my tone light. Nick gives a short laugh.
I wouldn't say that.
But do you all get together often? I've never had drinks with my neighbours. I can hear his shrug.
No, not that often. Sometimes. Hey, do you want a cigarette?
Oh, sure. Thanks. I hear the click of his lighter, and when the flame sparks, I see his face lit up from beneath. His eyes are black holes, blank as that statue's in the courtyard. He passes me my cigarette, and I feel the quick warm touch of his fingers, then his breath on my face as I lean closer for him to light the tip. A shiver of something in the air between us. I take a drag. I don't think Sophie likes me much. He shrugs.
She doesn't like anyone much.
And Jacques? Her husband? The one in that massive portrait? What's he like? He screws up his face.
A bit of a cunt, to be honest. And she's definitely just with him for his money.
I almost choke on my cigarette smoke. It was so casual, the way he said it. But with a real emphasis on the cunt. I wonder what he has against the couple. And if he's clearly not a fan, what on earth is he doing coming for drinks in their apartment? How about that guy from the downstairs flat? Antoine, I ask. I can't believe she'd invite him up here, I'm surprised she even lets him sit on her couch. And when I first arrived, he told me to fuck off. Talk about hostile. Nick shrugs.
Well, it's no excuse, but his wife just left him.
Yeah? I say. If you ask me, she had a pretty lucky escape.
Look, he says, pointing beyond me. You can see the Sacré-Cœur over there.
Clearly, he doesn't want to talk about his neighbours anymore. We gaze together at the cathedral, illuminated, seeming to float above the city like a big white ghost. And in the distance, yes, there, I can see the Eiffel Tower. For a few seconds, it lights up like a giant Roman candle, and a thousand moving lights shimmer up and down its height. I'm suddenly aware of how huge and unknowable this city is. Ben's out there somewhere, I think. I hope. Again, that feeling of despair. I give myself a mental shake. There must be something else I can learn, some new angle to this I haven't explored. I turn to Nick. Ben never mentioned what he was looking into, did he? I ask. The thing he was writing. The investigative piece.
He didn't say anything to me about it, Nick says. As far as I knew, he was still working on restaurant reviews, that kind of thing. But then, that's typical of him, isn't it?
I think I hear a note of bitterness. What do you mean?
Well, you have to ask whether anyone really knows the real Benjamin Daniels.
You're telling me, I think. Still, I wonder exactly what he means by it.
Anyway, it's what he always wanted to do.
He sounds different now, more wistful.
Investigative stuff. That or write a novel. I remember him saying that he wanted to write something that would have made your mum proud. He talked all about it on the trip.
You mean the one you took after uni? The way he said the trip made it sound important. The trip. I think of that screensaver. Some instinct tells me to press him on it. What was it like? You went all across Europe, right?
Yeah.
His tone is different again. Lighter. Excited.
We spent a whole summer doing it. Four of us. A couple of other guys, Ben and me. I mean, we were really roughing it. Grotty trains with no aircon, blocked loos. Days, weeks of sleeping, sitting up in hard plastic seats, eating stale bread, hardly washing our clothes. And then when we did, we had to use laundrettes.
He sounds thrilled. Babe, I think, if you think that's roughing it, you don't know you're born. I think of his minimalist apartment, the Bang & Olufsen speakers, the iMac. All that stealth wealth. I kind of want to hate him for it, but I can't. There's something melancholy about the guy. I remember the oxycodone I found in his bathroom. Where did you go? I ask.
All over, he says. We'd be in Prague one day, Vienna the next, Budapest a few days later. Or sometimes we'd just spend a whole week lying on the beach and hitting the clubs every night, like we did in Barcelona. And we lost a whole weekend to food poisoning in Istanbul.
I nod, like I know what he's talking about. But I'm not sure I could point to all those places on a map. So, that's what Ben was up to, I say. Sounds a long way from a one bed in Haringey.
Where's Haringey?
I give him a look. He even pronounced it wrong.
But of course, a rich kid like him wouldn't have heard of it. North London? It's where we come from, Ben and I. Even then, he couldn't wait to escape, to travel. Actually, it reminds me of something.
What?
My mum. She used to leave us on our own quite a lot. Well, she went out. She did shift work, and she'd lock us in from about 6, so we couldn't get up to any trouble. It can be a rough part of town, and we'd be so bored. But Ben had this old globe. You know, one of those light-up ones. He'd spend hours spinning it round, pointing out the places we might go, describing them to me. Spice markets, turquoise seas, cities on mountaintops. God knows how he knew any of that. Actually, he probably made it all up. I pull myself out of the memory. I'm not sure I've spoken to anyone else about all of that. Anyway, it sounds like you had a ball. The photo on your screensaver, that was Amsterdam, right? A look at Nick, but he's staring out into the night. My question is left hanging in the chill autumn air.
Concierge, the lodge. I am watching the roof terrace from my position in the courtyard. I saw the lights come on a few moments ago. Now I see someone step close to the rail. I catch the sound of voices, the faint strains of music floating down. Rather a contrast with the sounds coming from a few streets away, the whine of police sirens. I heard it just now on the radio. The riots are beginning again in earnest tonight. Not that any of them up there will know or care. The radio was a gift from him, actually. And only a few weeks ago, I watched him up there on the roof terrace, too, smoking a cigarette with the wife of the drunk on the first floor. As the figure next to the rail turns, I realize it's her, the girl staying in his. She has somehow gained access to the penthouse. Invited in? Surely not. If she is anything like her brother, I can imagine she may have invited herself. In a couple of days, she has gained access to parts of this building that I have never entered, despite working here for so many years. It is only to be expected. I am not one of them, of course. In all the time I have worked here, I can only recall the great Jacques Meunier looking at me twice, speaking to me once. But of course, to a man like that, I am barely human. I am something less than visible. But this girl is an outsider, too, just as much as I am, maybe more so. Also, apparently given to climbing like her brother, insinuating herself. Does she really know what she has got herself into here? I think not. I see another figure appear behind her. It's the young man from the second floor. I snatch in a breath. She really is very close to the rail. I only hope she knows what she is doing. Climbing so high, so quickly. It only makes for further to fall.